Hi, I'm Nick Gregoriadis, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat.
Greetings from Arizona, United States. It's so cool for me to be able to say that. It's a dream come true. This is episode 26. Before we get into the show, I just want to remind you guys that all of our amazing merchandise, including the Journey Belt, our Seeker Gi, and some pretty tricked out rash guards can be had for 10% off if you head on over to store.jiu-jitsubrother.com, pop in the coupon code podcast, and you can get 10% off any of our amazing merch. It really is what I believe to be some of the best jiu-jitsu stuff on the market. It's the kind of stuff I wanted to wear when I started training, and I couldn't find it. So after a lot of hard work and a lot of seeking, I went out and created it, and I'm sure you guys are going to enjoy it. So this episode is Manuel Flores. Manuel is one of my best training partners, and he was one of my first friends here in Arizona. And he's got a cool story. I ask you to listen to this one with an open mind. Okay, guys, enjoy. Hey, everyone, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. This is the second episode recording from my new home here in Arizona. And I'm actually with a friend of mine who was one of the first people I met in Tucson. His name is Manuel Flores, as he told me to pronounce it earlier. So Manny is super cool cat. One of the people who always puts a smile on my face whenever I see him or whenever I interact with him. And it's a great pleasure for me to have him on the show. Manny, thanks for coming down, bud.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. My man, so I'm living, or we're living here in the southwestern part of the United States. And one of the things I find fascinating about it is that it has such a strong Mexican heritage and Mexican culture because it's so close to Mexico.
Right.
And I'm fascinated by Mexican culture. I think it's really, really beautiful. And I'd say 99.9% of all the Mexican people I've interacted with in my life have been awesome people. And I want to know a little bit more about, if you don't mind starting with that, I want to find out a little bit more about what it was like to your upbringing. You're from Mexico originally, and then you left to come to the United States. And I'd just love to hear about that whole process.
Yeah, man. It was so I was born in Guadalajara, which is the southern part of Mexico. So when people talk about Mexico and they want to refer it to as like the border towns, oh, I've gone to Mexico, there's the border towns. That's really not the culture. You don't get a really good glimpse of what the culture is like. So the place that I'm from, it was, like I said, Guadalajara. It was originally a colony from Paris. So the architecture, it's very much something that you would find in Europe.
Wow.
I'm talking about like the cobblestones, the cathedrals. So it's a beautiful, beautiful town. And there's in Mexico, there's songs that talk about the beauty of the women. And it's because it's that, is that they still have that European look to them, you know, the collar eyes, the light collar eyes and stuff. So that's where I was from. But the reason that that we ended up moving to the U.S. is little by little. So this is about 1991, 1992. The country started going down the drain. You started seeing kidnappings, shootings. You started seeing. So, for example, in Guadalajara, there was a bishop that would attack the cartels during mass. He would call out the members of cartels. You know, why are you here? You know, this is a place to worship the Lord. You can't kill people Monday through Sunday or through Saturday and be here in church on Sunday. So ultimately what ended up happening is he comes back from a trip and they shot at his car for something like 5 minutes.
Damn.
in the highway from the airport to the city. And that's, my parents said, okay, that's enough of this. So being a little bit of a wild kid, they figured that if it brought me to a smaller town, maybe it would bring down my level of energy and curiosity and rebelliousness. Didn't work. But so that's when we moved to Hermosillo, and it's a very small town. It's more about the farmers and
this is in Mexico.
Mexico. Yeah. So we moved to Hermosillo, and that's where my parents' family is from. But same thing. I found a way of being rebellious. I'm in Hermosillo, and I discovered heavy metal, and I discovered wrestling, you know, kind of like my introduction to combat training.
Okay.
To fighting. So, you know, my dad wanted to put me in baseball, and I said no. So I, you know, I started wrestling, and but then in Hermosillo, same thing. Just the same effect started happening everywhere in the country, where people started getting kidnapped for a week's salary.
Damn.
You know, it's not even, so it wasn't even the rich people that were attacked, you know. Mm-hmm. Not that they should, but it wasn't anymore that just that high income families. It was people that were making $100 a week, and they would kidnap a member of the family and ask for that week's salary. And and sometimes they would chop off a limb, amputate a few fingers, just as a message to not go to the police, but release the person. So I think it was, again, same thing. My parents looking at me and trying to figure out a better place for me, because I wasn't really good at school either. I didn't really care for it.
Same.
Yeah. I appreciate education. I don't appreciate the way a school structure is set up. I think it does a disservice to the minds. You know, I think Albert Einstein said, when the only test in school is a jumping test, the elephant will fail every single time. You know, so we're not appreciating what
I haven't heard that kid, before. That's cool.
Yeah, we don't appreciate what every kid, where your curiosity is, you know.
I find it very interesting. So Manny, he brought his son along with to this meeting here at my place. And I haven't seen you or Yeshua for like almost 2 years now,
right?
Yeshua is now 19, and I said to you, what's he going to do? And you said, I'm just happy to not have him plugging into the system.
Absolutely.
Right? Which I thought was very interesting, because as I said to you a few minutes ago, I'm at the point in my life where I'm actually at 38 years old, I'm starting to plug into the system myself a little bit. Like, as I said to you, I've been living off the grid basically for a long, long time, and now I've got to go do all those things. Like, I got to get a house again, and I got to get a car,
studio,
and and for me, it's so strange to see that the difference between me and Yeshua, and how we're both on these different paths, and how you understand both of them. I think that's very, very cool. So Manny, I wanted to speak to you, like, the thing I find most interesting about you, right, there's many things, but this is one of the ones I find most interesting about you. So you're from Mexico, and you're living in USA, and we all know that there are these weird tensions in the States now because of these right-wing elements that are popping up, and there's a bunch of this weird nationalism, and you know, I'm sure as a Mexican person you've felt that, you know, staying here, or as a Mexican American, right? But the interesting thing is you're actually technically on the side of the government because you're a policeman.
Right.
Now, this is a very delicate subject, and I don't want to offend anyone because I just don't like offending people. And I know there's probably a lot of policemen that listen to this show, but one of the things that I found interesting on my first few trips to the United States, I remember my fiance and her brother and I were traveling in a convoy. It was my fiance and I were in the lead truck, and her brother and her two brothers were in the truck behind us. And we were driving from Tucson to Los Angeles one night. We came to a traffic stop about halfway at the border of Arizona. And they waved my fiance and I through, but they flagged the brother's car down, right? And I remember we pulled over to wait to see what would happen. And my fiance started freaking out. She was like, oh my God, they're pulling him out. I hope he knows what to do. Like, and I just got this real sense that people in the United States are really afraid of the police. You know, and I know that some policemen are, you know, someone once said to me, it's a strange type of personality that wants to become a policeman. It's someone who just wants to have authority and power over people. And when I think of you, that's the furthest thing I think of. You're not that kind of guy at all, right?
Yeah.
And I know that that's a stereotype and it's not exactly true. But how, I do find it very interesting that you are walking this weird line between us versus them, if that makes sense. And I'm talking about this weird nationalist type thing, and also being a government employee, if that makes sense to you.
No, it does. So talking about the personality of the police officer, it's a strange personality, because when the shots ring off. Self-preservation, fear, whatever you call it, makes you run the opposite way, where your personality, but your duty and you're sworn to protect, you're running towards it, and you let your training kick in and your personality kicks in of, you know, I have to protect these people and I have to confront that evil, whatever that evil is, mm-hmm. you know? So, but unfortunately, like I said, there's just like in jiu-jitsu, you know, you have amazing people that you meet in jiu-jitsu and they're great. And they're about that spiritual journey and guiding others through that. You have people that are in jiu-jitsu that don't belong in the sport, mm-hmm. you know? They're self-centered. They have their own private agenda as to why they want to compete, why they want to be in jiu-jitsu. And unfortunately, it's the same thing in law enforcement. You know, mm-hmm. there's people that when they pin that badge on you, it is the first time that you have experienced authority mm-hmm. or power mm-hmm. over somebody else. And you see their actions. You see their actions. And even if they'll never say, speak of being racist or speak of being, of having that power trip over people, mm-hmm. their actions speak for themselves.
That's interesting. So, you know, Steve Tyler, the lead singer of Aerosmith, right? I know you don't listen to that kind of music. It's not hardcore enough for you, but he said something once about wealth and fame. He said, wealth and fame will just amplify who you are, mm-hmm. right? And I think it's probably the same with power.
Abe Lincoln said it too. He said, you know, if you want to really test a person's character, give them power.
Yes. My friend Mike Bidwell from BJJ After 40, he said something I found interesting, which is, he says, like, and we're going to talk about this when I interview Mike later in the week as well. He says that one of the problems with jiu-jitsu is that, you know, if a dickhead comes in off the street, right, and you train him up and teach him jiu-jitsu, there's a potential that he might just be a dickhead who now knows jiu-jitsu.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's not necessarily going to be a cool dude.
That
is a problem.
You take that gamble. But, you know, I think I want to say, so I've been a police officer and a sergeant, you know, for 15 years of service now. Mm-hmm. And for, you know, my experience for the most part is that people's hearts are in the right place when they become mm-hmm. law enforcement. And I can tell you of selfless kinds of, you know, of actions of kindness and just complete disregard for one's safety and protect somebody you don't even know, you know? Mm. So, but people are entitled to their opinions, you know? And I used to work for a sergeant that me and him would butt heads because he wanted to have a discussion with everybody that protested our presence, you know? And he was very much an educator. He wanted to educate everybody. Whereas to me, not everybody wants seeks that education. Some people just want to protest you and they don't want to understand you, you know, but they don't want to understand law enforcement or who you are as a police officer or anything like that. So I refuse to engage in these arguments, you know, when they're protesting our presence and they want to say something to me, great, man, that's more power to you. You mm-hmm, know what? Mm-hmm. We're protecting that freedom of speech for you. Mm-hmm. And but there are people that are looking for that, you know, they'll sit down and for example, here in Tucson, we have a beautiful program called Coffee with a Cop. And where we try to grab as many police officers as we can, and we sit down, we have coffee, and we open it to the public, you know. Mm-hmm. And people come and sit down, and sometimes I've been fortunate enough where I've been able to have those conversations when somebody sits down and they grab their coffee and they go, I don't understand law enforcement, and I don't like cops, you know, but yet I'm here. And that's what I'm looking for. You know, when somebody's open for those kinds of conversations, let's do this, man. Let's have that conversation, you know, because I don't think you need to. I don't think you need to like something to respect it or understand it. Mm-hmm. You can be against it, oppose it, but still respect and understand
it. Well, I appreciate your insights on that. I've got so many things that pop into my mind when you discuss those things, Randy. Like one of them is, you know, if I was a black teenager who had been pulled over by the cops like 10 times in his life and just disrespected, and I'm not saying that it happens to all black teenagers, but you know, I'd probably think very, very differently of policemen. But at the same time, I think anyone who just blankets all policemen as it being bullies and authoritative dickheads, and I just think that's wrong. And just the fact that I'm sitting here with you as a cool guy and a policeman is an example that isn't always the case, right?
Right. So there, unfortunately, I think that there's people on both sides of the spectrum where, you know, for me being, you know, being Mexican, being a minority, when I first moved to the U.S., I can't tell you how many times there were people that wanted to approach me and really make me part of this movement of people hate you. You know that, right?
Yeah.
There's racism, mm-hmm. and there's people that are going to hate you, and there's people that they're going to oppress you, and you're being oppressed. And yeah. I, you know, some of my greatest opportunities in life came from Americans. White, you know, as they say, white people.
Yeah,
white people,
yeah, yeah.
You know, gave me some of the biggest shots in life, you know?
And if you had just taken that view that they were trying to impose upon you unquestioningly, you would have started to see that reflect in your life. When you start thinking these people are starting to, or trying to oppress me, you would find examples of that. You can always find what you're looking for.
But right? There's money involved, right? There's money involved. There's people that make money out of telling the Hispanic culture here in Tucson that they're being oppressed. There's money involved in telling the African-American community they're being oppressed. There's money involved in making people believe they're victims.
You really think that's a big part of it, huh?
Absolutely, man. Wow. Absolutely. There's people that make money. Unfortunately, I know a couple of people that make really good money out of pushing that agenda of you're being oppressed. There's a hidden agenda. Racism didn't disappear. It morphed, which it kind of did. But at the same time, my son looks like me. That kid belongs in central Mexico with me.
Uh-huh.
I've had a conversation about this because I think it's important for him to understand that it does exist. But I've never pushed that victimization onto him. You know, it's... Uh-huh. So I don't think that my son has ever experienced anything like that. I think we need to empower our youth instead of keep, that's a voice from the past, you know, that's a voice from the past that keeps coming up and keeps trying to divide us. Get that, push that aside, man, you know, push that aside.
100%, dude, 100%. Thank you for that insight. That's awesome, Manny. So Manny, let's talk about jiu-jitsu, man. Like,
let's do it.
You know, you are one of, you're one of my favorite training partners, no doubt, bro. Like,
no,
it's such a war, bro. When I would go to Manny's academy and visit him, because we're the same size, I'd say we're the same skill level. I'm a little bit more handsome than you, to be fair.
So we've talked about this. I've accepted that I am the second most handsome jiu-jitsu practitioner. And I take that, you know?
It's just such a... I thoroughly enjoy our matches because we have... really, I think we're very, very similar skill level, similar size, definitely. But our games are slightly different, so we always have these wars, like he'll tap me one, and then I'll tap him one, and then it's just such a pleasure to roll with you. So I can attest that Manny is a very, very good jiu-jitsu practitioner, and your students are tough as well. So you're definitely doing something right. And I wanted to just know a little bit about your journey and how you came to be, you're the head instructor of a... It's a Paragon affiliated academy. It's called Daimyo, which I always thought was a cool name. The Daimyo with the step below the Shogun. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. So how did you find yourself at this point when it comes to jiu-jitsu?
So I started practicing jiu-jitsu in 2000, but prior to that, I started wrestling when I was 12 and kickboxing when I was 15. So I had to quit wrestling when I moved to the U.S. because I spoke no English whatsoever.
Okay.
So I would get frustrated, my coach would get frustrated, so I ended up leaving and just doing kickboxing, which was just easier. But even then, I started fighting and competing, so... but I think it was just like everybody else, I saw that first UFC and saw that jiu-jitsu being used, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've always said, you know, even back then, I said, the second I find jiu-jitsu, I'm doing it, you know? So I found an academy here in Tucson, and I started training there. And got to brown belt, and... me and the coach just started butting heads. We had a lot of problems, you know, early belts, and it just eventually got to the point where we just couldn't be together.
Fair enough.
And unfortunately, we disrespected each other at the personal level. And at that point, when you lose respect for somebody, if they lose respect for you or you lose respect for them, it's time to move on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you fix the relationship later on, you know, which, you know, I tried, but. But even back then, I competed at PAS when I was a blue belt, and I saw Paragon competing, the team, and I saw mm-hmm. Frangina, and I saw Jeff Glover, and all those guys hanging out together, and this is the early stages of YouTube, you know, so I would go to YouTube and just, obviously you try to follow a lot of people's different games, but I've always found that academy very interesting, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that
mm-hmm.
their approach to jiu-jitsu, so... When I find myself leaving the academy and kind of looking for the new master, somebody that would take me to that next level, you
mm-hmm,
know, it was Frangina.
Okay.
So
I'm going to come to the seminar. You have a seminar with him in a couple of weeks,
right? On the 20th, yeah.
That's right. I'm going to come check that out.
So I called him. We had a friend in common, and she had been training in a couple different academies. So I told her, if you were in my shoes with a small academy that you just opened, you're a brown belt, where would you go? Mm-hmm. And she had been training all over California. And she told me straight up, she said, she mentioned like all the other black belts that she'd been training mm-hmm. with. And she goes, I would go to Frangina.
Wow, okay.
So call Frangina. And this is probably like June, July. And he says, all right, when can you come? And I said, I can be there in October. So he said, okay. So we went and met the man, had awesome conversations. Just, you know, they said, never meet your idols, you know. Yeah, but he was my idol. I met him and just fell in love with his, not just his view of jiu-jitsu, but life, you know, because he's very much like us. Like, he's able to have all these different conversations.
That's cool.
Very smart man. So
it's been my experience that there are generally, like, I don't like categorizing people because I think it reduces them, but or it limits them. But, you know, hypothetically, there are like two kinds of jiu-jitsu guys that I've met, and the one is like that one-dimensional guy that, like, that's all he can talk about is jiu-jitsu. That's the only thing in his life.
Wrestling.
And it's like, and then there's the other guy who's kind of, jiu-jitsu is a big part of his life, but he's also, you know, he's multifaceted, multi-dimensional. Right. And it sounds like Frangina is that kind of guy. I'd really like I'm looking forward to meeting him.
Yeah, he's awesome, man. He's awesome. So like I said, yeah, so we went under him, and then, like, our journey started under Frangina, you know. So it took me 2 years to get my black belt from him, you know. He said, I had just had an injury on duty where I tore my AC joint.
Can you tell me how that happened on duty? That's on duty. Interesting.
No, there's nothing interesting. It's it was a training ride. This is when I was in the bicycle unit, okay. And I went over the handlebars and tore my shoulder.
Damn.
So I had surgery and.
We got to change that story, bro. You were like busting down the door of a crack den,
dude. So if you look at my hands, there's scars everywhere.
Okay.
So I definitely do have those stories of knives and guns.
Man, if you're okay to get into those, I'd love to hear, like, if we're gonna just change tack from the jiu-jitsu again.
Yeah.
So what is your scariest memory as a policeman? What's the first thing that comes to mind?
Man. Honestly, like, you would think that it was the shootings and stuff like that, but it's been more of the domestic situation, like a domestic fight. Only because they're so emotional, you know. It's a domestic violence, domestic relationships have what they call like the honeymoon phase where everything's great. The relationship deteriorates, so now you have violence, and that's usually where we get involved. And then it goes back to the honeymoon phase, but that could happen in a matter of seconds. So you can have a woman that was just kicked in the face, you know, bleeding, holding on to their newborn, and she is calling 911 because she fears for her life. You break in through the door because the guy's not letting him go, or he's actively trying to hurt them, and then you get in a fight with a guy. And just like that, the cycle is completed. And
holy shit.
And now she's on your back and she's hitting you as you're fighting with the guy. And
God
there's
damn.
There's a little baby being thrown around. So those situations, you know, so they're very volatile because you don't call where it happens. You know, it might start in the living room, ends up in the kitchen, ends up with knives and stuff like that. So
I think, I mean, for me, that's the... Look, I was under no illusions. I know that being a cop is difficult, but just hearing that story, it just puts it in a whole new perspective for me. I just remember being around my mom and dad fighting. I mean, it was never like physical violence, but it was a lot of emotional bullshit. And even to this day, bro, when like I see a couple fighting, I don't want to be anywhere fucking near it, bro.
Right.
Like if I see a couple start arguing in a restaurant or something, I just want to get the fuck out of there. So if that was my job to go and deal with stuff like that, oh my God, that must be really difficult, man.
It is, man, and it is. And so I'll tell you the one that's affected me to this day. And for everybody that knows me, it's like I'm horrible with names, been hit in the head so many times. But it also has to do with like how many times I moved when I was a little kid that I stopped remembering people's names because it didn't matter. You know, if I just moved to a new town, I was going to be there for a couple of years and I would never see my friends again. Uh-huh, so I just kind of, the name started just coming and going. But I remember going to this call where, and I was brand new and people had called in that this lady was hitting a baby in diapers. And another officer responded before we did. And he, as he's walking through the complex, trying to see the this apartment complex, this lady's in the balcony with this little kid, man. He was in diapers, but he could make noises, I remember, and he could walk. And she takes the grill from, like, not a gas grill, but just like a barbecue grill. Yeah, like a barbecue grill. And with the metal, hits the kid on the head. And not just, you know, gently, just hits it enough to where the officer had to force entry because this lady's hitting the kid like this. Mm-hmm. And it was emotionally enough for him that we had to remove him because he just saw a little baby get hit. So he did what he had to do. And then we came in shortly after because obviously now there's a fight. Mm-hmm. So we restrained the lady. We pulled her out and husband and stuff like that. And my youngest was probably about the same age, around the same time. Mm-hmm. So here's this little kid, man, in diapers, you know, and the diapers were yellow because he hadn't been changed. And this cutest little thing. So me as a father, my father instinct kicked in and I picked him up, you know. Mm-hmm. So at that point, you have to take custody of the kid, legal custody of the kid, and then you have to hand him over to the state. So a representative of the state, child services, has to come in and take that child and put him somewhere safe. Obviously, the mom was arrested. But holding on to that kid, this kid goes from, you know, they understand, man. It's unbelievable the level of understanding those little babies have, you know, because he's looking at mom, and now mom goes away, and this kid becomes afraid, and the only thing that he finds with safety is me holding him. Mm-hmm. And now the baby is being taken away. CPS, the state services, shows up, and... And now I have to hand him over, and the baby starts crying. And I'm in the car, and I'm leaning in, I'm rubbing in, I'm trying to tell him, trying not to choke up right now, but I'm trying to tell him he's going to be okay. So that was, man, that was 13 years ago. Wow. So that kid has to be about 15 years old right now.
So the thing.
So the baby goes away. So the baby goes away. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's cool.
The baby goes away, and I go back to my trainer at the time. And once we're in the car, it's just me and him, and we're really good friends right now, but once it was just in the intimacy of me and my trainer at the time, dude, I started crying. And he tells me, you know, he goes, and he looks at me, he goes, that's why I don't hug kids, you know, on the streets. He goes, people think that we are being cold hearted. That's like, you know, here's like child in need, and you might comfort him and stuff. He goes, I need to, for the sake of my own emotionals, you need that boundary, man.
Yeah, and, now for anyone listening, like, who's one of those people who would scream "fuck cops" or "I hate the police" or whatever? Like, who's gonna do this shit if the police aren't doing it?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's
right.
Wow, Manny, that's a powerful story. Okay, so I drag you down. Let's pull you back up, bro. So, what's your best jiu-jitsu memory, dude? What's like?
Dude, I have so many of them, but you know, I enjoy obviously being a competitor. I enjoy being in the mix. I think there's something romantic about entering a tournament where it's just you against a bunch of guys, and you never make it healthy to the semis or the finals. You know, you're always banged up, and the other guy's banged up, and it's just shake hands and you go. You know, so I enjoy that. But honestly, what I find the most rewarding experience is being a coach.
Okay.
I enjoy being a coach. I enjoy seeing people when they come in through the doors and they've never done jiu-jitsu and they're very fearful. I enjoy teaching them what jiu-jitsu is and what it means to me and what it could mean in their life, and just seeing them grow and watching their self, you know, their self-belief, their confidence grow, and then you hear them that they got a new job, you know, and that they had confidence to go for this thing that they've always wanted to do, you know. So that's what I find the most rewarding. I mean, I could tell you about winning this belt or that medal and this other medal, fighting in the cage. I fight in the police Olympics and boxing too. All of that rewarding, but to me it's more about like seeing my students have success. My success will continue, but it's, to me, it's far more important to watch them.
It's for others, it's not for yourself, right? Huh? Exactly. It's the lesson I keep learning over and over with everything, dude, is the more I try to help everyone in my circle be happier, healthier, the more I feel all those things for myself, right? Dude, I keep seeing that, man.
Frangina said this, man, one time, because I've you know, the one thing I love about Frangina, man, and he'll probably yell at me for telling this story, but, you know, the one thing I hate about social media right now is that there's no, I shouldn't say there's no, there's the amount of honest human interactions, positive human interactions are not honest. People do it for the Instagram likes. Mm-hmm. They do it for the likes.
I fucking hate that, man.
Like, you're going to give, dude, if you're going to give this homeless guy $100, shut the fuck up and give him $100, man. Yeah. You know, just send him away. Yeah. Make him, let him retain his dignity. Don't film him crying or like the waitress. If I give you $100, how is this going to change your life? I hate that, man.
Yeah.
And during the fires in California, which affected Ventura, Frangina turned his academy into a shelter for any students that were displaced.
That's cool. You know?
You didn't see him on the news. He you know, there was no advertisement. Look at me, like, look how many people have this. He just did it out of the honest love, kindness of his heart.
Mm-hmm.
But he told me this, man. He said, you have a duty as an instructor. The second you start achieving success and happiness in your life, you have a duty to start returning that to people.
Wow.
So, dude, I mean, you know me, man, and beautiful kids, beautiful wife, beautiful home. I'm happy where I'm at. My academy is growing. I'm about to open another one.
Mm-hmm.
I have no excuse why not to try to return that happiness right away to somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know, so I try, you know, but I try to do it in that manner. You know, it's not about the Instagram likes or anything like that. And, mm-hmm. you know.
Manny, what an absolute pleasure it is to talk to you and to see you as well, my brother. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Second most handsome human being ever.
My man, tell me... Well, not me. Tell everyone, if people want to find out more about you and your Jiu-Jitsu Academy and the things you're doing, where should they go online to check it out?
They can go to DaimyoBJJ.com. That's DaimyoBJJ.com. You can visit our academy. We have an academy in the South Side with one of my black belts, the Irie. So that's at Irvington and I-19. We're at Ina and Shannon. We have another location coming up to Twin Peaks. So stop by. Let's have fun together.
That's awesome. Manny, 1,000 blessings on you, my brother.
Thank you, man.
That was really cool for me to have that conversation with Manuel. I'm at a point in my life where I'm really finding the love in what I do. And as I was sitting there looking at Manuel and he was sharing his story, and I could see that he was really telling the story from his heart, it was such a pleasure for me to sit there and be a part of it, and I really appreciated that from Manuel. And I hope if you listen to that episode, if you were someone who hated policemen or hated authority, that you'd keep in mind that it's not a good idea to stereotype any group of people. Okay, guys, until next time, hope you enjoyed the show. Peace out.